Bob, and I'm the lead pastor. We're in this series called Tell All Your Friends. And when you think about talking to people about God or telling people about Jesus, it's awkward. You know, for most of it, it's a little bit awkward. I mean, some personality types, not as much. But I don't know if there's anything that you do in your life that's awkward. Maybe you're awkward in the kitchen or you're not, like, good at mechanics or something. My big thing is, and it's probably no secret to you, I'm very awkward on the dance floor. So I'm just not, like, a real natural type dancer. Now, the problem is I married Miss Dance. So my wife, she loves to dance. She thinks dancing is the greatest thing ever. So she's always wanting me to dance with her. And I'm kind of awkward on the dance floor before I even get to the dance floor. You know, like I'm sitting over at the table just with the idea that Clarice might want to, and I can already feel the awkwardness coming on me that I might have to dance. And Clarice, like most women, I don't know if you notice how women are, women start dancing at the table. Hey, you want to go do some dancing? You know, and then they don't walk to the dance floor, because all men, they walk slowly like they're going to the gallows to the dance floor. But women start dancing, and they're dancing all the way to the dance floor. You know, they're just, we're going dancing, and they're kind of dancing, you know. And you can see the men behind them just going very stiffly. Oh, my God, how bad is it going to hurt, you know. So that's me. It's awkward. And then, you know, so like we're out here, and I'm like, hey. Now, guys, you never see any, well, there's always a guy. You know, he's the guy that, like, his shirt is unbuttoned down to here, and he's got, like, Mr. Shag carpet chest, you know. And he dances everywhere. So you know, you kind of watch him around, and he's kind of dancing out where you're not supposed to dance. It's the safety zone for men, you know. But he's dancing around at tables. He's always the single guy that's trying to get the girls to kind of be interested to dance with him. And he thinks that by showing he can sort of move, that'll happen. So he'll be kind of be dancing around at their tables and looking at them like this, you know. And most girls totally blow that off. But the smooth dude, he doesn't care. This girl, he's dancing. And hey, she blows him off like, get out of here. He's like, oh, no problem. You know, he dances over the next girl, you know. He's like dancing, you know. It's like, and so I get out on the dance floor with Clarice. And when I'm on the dance floor, it's like I become like a split personality, because I'm very aware of my body, and I'm having an inner conversation like, put your hands down. You know, it's like, because my hands will be flapping. What do you look like? You look like a bird. Put them down immediately. You know, because I'm dancing around. And for some reason, I was in a marching band when I was a kid. So I never, my knees always want to go like this from back in the day. I've actually had people say to me on the dance floor, stop, you look like you're marching. I'm like, am I? I guess I'm back in my marching band days, you know, and it's like this. And as you're dancing around, I don't know why it is, but some people look pretty good when they move their hips around. I don't. And so, you want to see that again? Check that out. And so, you know, I'm like this, and as soon as I start moving my hips around like this, you know, now the back of my mind doesn't say anything. My wife says, stop now. You know, you are a geek. And so, I don't know what your thing is. Maybe you love to dance. You're not awkward. I am awkward when it comes to dancing. And I want to let you know, when I first started to go to church, started thinking about God, started thinking about telling other people about God, it's very awkward for me. You know, how do you bring it up and what do you say? And then you see in the Bible that this good news gets around person to person. And that's really, you know, not just the Bible, but the good news gets, you know, told by other people. And if you miss the news, I mean, the good news, everybody's in class, the professor comes in and says, hey, everybody passed, you know. You didn't get the news, you don't know that. You know, the big news is there's a tax credit this year, you're going to get a greater refund, you know. Or if your boss said to everybody, hey, everybody gets Monday off and you get paid for it, but nobody gives you the news. So you show up at 7 o'clock and, you know, you're... who's making the coffee? You know, you make the coffee and 8:15, 8:30, like, what's going on around here? You know, you finally call, you know, your buddy or your friend up at, you know, 9:15. It's like, what's up? Nobody's at work. And like, you didn't get the news? The boss gave everybody the day off today, paid. You're like, oh, man, I'm actually on my way to go skiing. I mean, think about how your whole day could have been different, how everything would have been different for you if you would have got the news. And so, you know, like, news can be very important. And in this series that we're in, Go Tell All Your Friends, that's really what we're talking about. How does the news get around? And we're going to look at a story today. The big idea today, write it in your outline, is the news is for everyone. Here's the news. God cares about you. So four words, really simple. God cares about it. That's the news we're trying to get around. We're not trying to teach people theology. We're not trying to sell them anything. We just have one basic message. God cares about you. That's the news. That's the good news. And we're going to look at a story today about Jesus and this woman. And this woman really needs some news, some good news. So we'll look at it. Let me read the first part to you. Soon a Samaritan woman came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Please give me a drink." He was alone at the time because his disciples had gone into the village to buy some food. The woman, she was surprised, for Jews refused to have anything to do with Samaritans. She said to Jesus, "You're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan woman. Why are you asking me for a drink?" And a lot of people in life are trapped, and at some point all of us get trapped in something. We get trapped in our finances, or we get trapped in a job that we don't like, or we get trapped in a part of our relationship. It's like, man, I can't get any traction. I hate where this is right now. We get trapped from something in our past. We get trapped with some shame or some guilt, but we're trapped. And what I've discovered is most people are very open to the news if you care about them. Because somewhere in their life they're trapped, and when they hear God cares about them, and so most people are very open to that. Most people are willing to listen to that if they're respected. And part of what we do is we provide bridges for people. East Lake Church was like the broadcasting area that helps get the news out to others. Because if people don't hear the news, they go into work on Monday morning when they don't have to. See, there's all kinds of news, and people live in their own story about God, but the Christ followers have the news for them. And so that's what we do. We build bridges for people, and we help them understand, hey, here's the big news. And this story that's taking place, Jesus started on kind of a public tour, a speaking tour. It's called a ministry. He went out, and his public ministry begins. And right off the bat, it's very, very popular. You know, it's pretty popular. It's gaining popularity. It's getting bigger and bigger. Lots of people are coming. They haven't heard anything like this. It's very, very different. And the religious leaders, in that day, the church was mostly Jewish. And so the church of the day, the religious leaders, they're not okay with this thing, because they say to Jesus, "You're making this idea of having a relationship with God seem way too easy. I mean, where are the rules and the regulations? I mean, like, for Pete's sake, how are we supposed to know who gets in and who gets out?" And Jesus says, "Yeah, right, exactly. I don't want anybody out. I want everybody in." And so, you know, they're clashing right off the bat, you know, because his message is God cares about you, come ahead. And they're like, oh, we got to check some IDs at the door. So they're clashing, and they reject him. So when he meets this woman, oh, and by the way, let me ask the question. Who do you know in your life, and the whole reason they're not with God right now is they had some kind of a religious experience that turned them away? And so Jesus, he's like all in the middle of that stuff, and the religious leaders are pressuring, rejecting him. And when he meets this woman, he's tired and feeling rejected. And oh, by the way, you know, Jesus went through the same sort of stuff that you go through and that I go through. He knew the sting of rejection. He knows all about that. And so he sits down at this well, and the disciples go to buy some food. And he sits down there, and this is like a rough time in his life. And he sits down, and he's feeling rejected, he's confused. And, you know, here comes some people to talk. And you know, all there is this one woman there. And he starts to talk with her. And it's very surprising to this woman, because in that culture, men don't speak to women, hardly ever publicly. So that blows her mind right off the bat. It's like, whoa, you're like, this is taboo. You're like, you're talking to me. And Jews don't associate, they don't associate with at all with Samaritans. And so she's really shocked by this thing. In fact, most Jewish people, this area, Samaria, most Jewish people completely avoid it. They don't go way around it, so they don't have to go into Samaria. Because in Samaria, here's who lives there. All the people that have been rejected by the church, they live in Samaria. Or the people that have rejected the church, they're fed up, they don't want anything to do with the church. So this area of Samaria, that's where everybody lives, don't want anything to do with the church at all. I kind of got God on the back burner, but nothing to do with church. So all the Jews avoid them. Oh, those are the people over there. They didn't even go to church. Except for Jesus, he goes right into it. Here's why. He always cares about the people that have been separated from God somehow. So he goes right into Samaria. And maybe you know somebody. Like when you thought to yourself, well, I know who's been separated from God because of religion. I got somebody right on my mind right now. So Jesus, he goes right into Samaria because he always cares about the people that have been separated from God. You can be in a church that you can feel so much pressure and you see how somebody gets treated and you want to say something like, oh, I better not, man. Because if I do, I might be next. And he's not like that. He just goes right in and he sits down at this woman and he starts talking to her. She's like, here's what happens. He asks for a drink of water. And in that culture, if like you asked for a drink of water, someone gave you a drink of water, or you gave somebody, it was a token of friendship. So here's what Jesus is really doing. He's saying, do you want to be my friend? Or maybe this is a better thing. Jesus is saying, I want to be your friend. Now go down to Trolley Square or Gateway Mall or up to the Target or up to the U or something. Just take a clipboard and go ask everybody. Just say, one word, describe God. I wonder how many people would say friend. Or how about for you? Here's a tip on relationships. Whenever you're trying to figure out, gosh, what is this relationship supposed to be like? I don't care if you're a parent, girlfriend, boyfriend, grandpa, whatever. Start with the word friend. And go from there. Jesus says, you want to be friends? And she's like, what? Why would you want to be friends with someone like me? And I think a lot of people, like, that's where they're at. They're like, God wouldn't want to be friends with me. In fact, God's not even someone's friend. If he was someone's friend, he wouldn't be friends with someone like me. But that's what he's saying to this woman. He says, you want to be friends? Here's what she's going to learn. Not only does he want to be everyone's friends, he cares about everyone. So look in your notes. The first one is, we'll put it in like this little story. We'll put it in different scenes. Okay, so scene one, drink from a better well. Jesus replied, if only you knew the gift God has for you and who you're speaking to, you'd ask me and I'd give you living water. So Jesus is talking to this woman, and here's where this woman is at. She doesn't think God will ever do anything good for her. And if God ever does anything good for her, she will have to earn it. So I wanted to ask a question, just like be emotionally honest. Is there anything you're putting off talking to God about because you don't feel like you've quite earned his attention yet? Because that's the woman. She's like, God's never going to do anything good for me. And if he is ever going to do anything good for me, I'm going to have to earn the right to be heard. And Jesus starts this. He says, man, if you only knew. Sometimes I think if we were going to sum up East Lake Church, I might sum it up in that sentence. If you only knew. That's what he says to the girl. He says, if you only knew, God's not a taker. God's a giver. He doesn't need anything from you. He's not into the relationship for his benefit. I mean, she knows what it's like to be with takers. And so, of course, she sees God that way. But he says, if you only knew, God's a giver. He's ready to give to you. Stands ready to respond. I learned this pretty long ago with one of my children. I woke up in the night and they were screaming in bed. Just like screaming out, you know. So, man, I was out of bed like a bolt. I just ran right into their bedroom, got right close to the bed. But by the time I got in, they stopped screaming and they were like fast asleep. I'm like, oh, great, that's cool, you know. But as I was standing there looking at them, I was just realizing, wow, I just bolted in there. And just then God said, that's how I feel about you. How you felt just now, that's how I feel. What you did just now, that's what I will do for you. I am so ready to bolt into action. And I had to learn that. Because my feeling was, you know, God, he's not ready to bolt into action for me. Man, you got to have a pretty clean life to get him moving. And this woman's like, God, God's not going to do anything for me. And he starts talking to her about wells. He's great connecting, communicating. He's sitting at a well where there's some water, and he starts talking to this woman about wells. And he says, you know, there's a lot of different wells you can go to in life. You can draw from a lot of different wells to get refreshed, to get your thirst quenched. There's so many different ones you can go to. And our culture has an example. You can go to the well, and above it, it says fun. Everybody wants to have fun. Fun's an important thing. It's just like, well, that's where I live. I always try to go over and drink out of that well. And you know, that's the most important well to me. And everything, it doesn't matter how you get your fun. You ride a Harley Davidson, you run a marathon, you know, you it could be weird, fun. I mean, whatever. I go skiing. I mean, whatever it is, my life is all about. I got to have fun. I got to have fun. All week long, crappy job. All weekends here, going to have fun. I mean, it's all about having fun. And that's the well you want to be at. You're always trying to get to that well. If I could just get over to that well, I need another drink. I'm at the well of fun. Which, by the way, pretty soon, if you just drink from that well all the time, that's the primary well, what you discover is pretty soon you're the center of your universe pretty quickly because it's all about your fun. So it gets harder and harder and harder to do anything that isn't any fun. And here's the problem. There's so many things in life that are significant that are no fun. It is no fun visiting a relative in the hospital that might possibly die. That's no fun. It's no fun to do your math homework. He said, it wasn't for me. You know, it's no fun to ask somebody for forgiveness. It's no fun to go to somebody and ask for apologies. It's no fun to skip lunch and buy a lunch for a homeless person that you see every day. That's no fun. But it's significant. It's no fun to practice your craft or your trade. It's no fun to lay down your right to be right with your spouse. Those aren't fun. But if you're drinking at the well over here all the time, fun, it's just all about fun. I mean, that's what I'm all about. Then when it's the opportunity to do something over here, like, well, that's not any fun, and I'm not doing it. And what Jesus is saying to this woman, he's saying there's so many different wells you can drink from, and there's a lot. You can drink from the I want more sex well, I want more money well, I want to complain about everybody else well. I mean, what well do you drink from the most? We all got them. We dig them ourselves. And Jesus is talking with him, saying, you know, it kind of depends what well you're at, how your life goes. And listen to what he says. Jesus replied, anyone who drinks this water will soon become thirsty again. But those who drink the water I give will never be thirsty again. It becomes fresh, bubbling spring within them, giving them eternal life. So he's drawing a distinction. He's saying, I have a place that you can come and drink from that's different from all the other wells. Would you be willing to come over here? And so the question in this part of the story is, what well do you regularly drink from? And does your thirst go? And here's what I've noticed. You'd think that it would be easy for us to go, gosh, man, I'm still as thirsty as I used to be. I'll go try another well. But that's not what I see happen, at least in my life. When I'm thirsty, I stay at the same well and I drink more from that well. And nothing happens. I don't get my thirst quenched, but I don't think to myself, hey, you know what? This well sucks. I'm going to go to another well. And I just say, well, I must need another cup. I need three cups. Get away. It's all my water. You know, I need more. And here's the thing. Unfulfilled desire is the greatest cause of depression. So you're just drinking out of that well like crazy and nothing's getting better. And now I'm depressed because I can't see any different. I don't see any other circumstances for me. That doesn't seem like there's any other way. And so I just get more and more depressed about it, and I drink more and more and more. And one person described it like this, I am dying of thirst and craving salt, which will mess with your head. And so Jesus, he's trying to get her straightened out. He says, hey, listen, there's a whole other well you can drink from. Second scene, right in your notes, consider your influence. So he starts to talk with her. Now, go get your husband, Jesus told her. And she says, I don't have a husband. The woman replied, Jesus said, you're right, you don't have a husband, for you have had five husbands, and you aren't even married to the man you're living with now. You certainly spoke the truth. So this woman has some relationship problems, don't we all? She has some relationship issues, and Jesus starts to talk to her about, you know, you keep hoping that a relationship is going to change your life. You've got all your focus on the well that you're at is it's going to be a relationship. Some kind of relationship is going to change my life entirely. And, you know, like I said, more, she's like, well, it's going to be this man. You know, oh, it's not that man, it's this man. And not that man either, well, it'll be this man. And then five marriages later, she's like, well, maybe the way to do this is you don't marry the man, you just live with the man. You know, I remember talking to a guy one time, and that was his strategy, and that's what I thought before I became a Christ follower. That's what all my friends thought. I mean, we weren't very nice people. We'd always say, "Oh, you think I gotta see what she's like," and you know this type of stuff. And so I'm talking to this one young guy one time, and I said, "Well, what do you think? You know, you look like you're dating her." So he's a church guy. He says, "Well, I don't know yet." You know, he says, I'm going to have to live with her for a while. And I said, and then he said this. He said, I never marry anybody that I hadn't had sex with a few times to see what they're like. I got to live with them a while and see what that's like. And I got to have sex with her quite a bit and see what that's like. He says, I'm kind of testing it. And as he's doing it, all of a sudden I had this thought. And I says, but are you talking about a woman or a car? So I actually said to him, I said, dude, women are not automobiles. You don't test drive them. And I think what happened for him is he just didn't see any other options. He thought, well, that's the way my friends do it, and it's the way they talk about it in my family. What kind of idiot would ever get together with some woman that he didn't know what she was like in bed? That's stupid. And I said, well, there is another well, if you're interested. You could actually have a relationship with God and ask him about it. He does know a few things. You could actually talk and get to know her heart. Now, be honest, and this is for dudes too. Have you ever felt like you just sort of got test drove and then somebody said, nah, I'm not buying it? And then, you know, where are you? You know? I mean, I'm not trying to be vulgar. I don't look at it that way. But I'm just saying. It just feels like, man, is that what happened to me? You were just testing it and now you've decided, no, you're not buying me. I'm left on the lot. With more miles and a less sticker price now, because, you know. And so with this woman, now she's five relationships in. And now she's with a man that she's not married to. So she stays at the well because she doesn't have any other options. She doesn't really know any other way to do it. And here's what Jesus is saying. Now listen to this, because this could be a shocker for some of you. God never intended our lives to revolve around our relationships with people. They're important, but they're not the center. Like when he created the first two people, he didn't say, well, you guys are fine now. Don't worry about me. You don't need a relationship with me anymore because you have each other. Because that's not the way it's supposed to be. You'll discover in life, as I have, and some of you have discovered this already, how my relationship with God goes, good mile of my relationships go. And so like he's trying to tell you, he said, you can't have a relationship as your well. I mean, how many times do you have to drink out of it? I mean, can you see that? And here's the thing. What I've discovered is that I can ask a relationship to provide something for me that God never intended it to. It's not fair. And this is how screwy it can be. You buy an electric car, you go home, you get your electric guitar home, you put it down, someone comes over and they see you bashing it onto the ground. And they come up and say, well, what's going on? This stupid thing didn't grind up any of my food like garbage disposals are supposed to. You're like, you on crack? What are you talking about? I smashed a tomato into it. Look at it. So it's still right there. Not one thing ground up. And I'm an ecologist. I'm an environmentalist. You're like, that's a guitar, man. Never intended to grind up your garbage. Here's the point. You can ask a relationship to provide something for you it was never intended to. And guess what happens? You get angry, or they get angry, and you move on to the next one. And it's weird when you're at five. That's the record in my family. Five divorces. Some people have more, some less. I remember having some hope one time when I thought about that relative. I was like, God, at least I could keep it to three or four, I hope. I don't want to be the record holder in my family. Because I want that relationship to be something God had never intended it to be. He's talking to this woman about that. And that's what he tells her. He says, hey, is that really working? So I wanted you to think of something. Is there any relationship you have? Why not be honest for a moment with yourself? Just think about it. Is there any relationship you have? And when it really comes down to it, that relationship is more a center of your life than anything. Because that's the well you're drinking from. All right, let's look on to the next one, number three. Look for an opportunity. The woman said, I know the Messiah is coming, the one who's called Christ. When he comes, he'll explain everything to us. Then Jesus told her, I am the Messiah. Messiah is a Hebrew word. It means the chosen one. The ancient story in the Old Testament always said there's someone coming someday. There's someone coming someday. Someone's coming someday. And when they come, they're going to be the bridge so you can know God. They're going to make a way for everybody to know God. In fact, they're going to give their whole life. Everything about them is going to be about you having something with God. It'll cost them their life. They'll give everything so you can have a relationship with God. That's what Messiah means. And that's the picture of it. It's a historical fact. Jesus died on the cross, regardless of what that means to you. That's the truth. And he was called Messiah. And so she says, someday, and here's what she's saying, someday I'm going to have a relationship with God. Someday I'm not going to make it about men. Someday I'm going to get, you know, my life going a different direction. Someday I'm going to do all of that. And Jesus says, but I'm here now. You know what Messiah means in our vernacular? Today. You know what religion means? Someday. Messiah means today. When I was in college, I worked in a nursing home, and I was an activities assistant. So I was the bingo caller and the shuffleboard man, and I would read stories to them, and it was just, that was my job, to be with all the people in the nursing home. And there was this, I remember this one lady that came in, I remember the day they admitted her, and she was so confused and scared, and it's like is often the case. And her family did as best they could, but she didn't want to be there, and it was just, you know, most of us are going to go through that, and it's just hard, and a lot of us, I saw it all happen, and she just, and she got so ornery and grouchy. And I used to watch her. She'd come out of her room, and right out of her room, there was a little couch where two people could sit. And she would sit on that. She had a blue windbreaker, silvery hair, and she would sit on the edge of that couch, and she would look down the hallway at the office, and she would just scout. She never said what she said. You know, people started kind of walking around her, and every day, same thing. She'd get herself all ready. Nobody ever knew what she looked like in her room, really, but when she came out, she just sat down. She just, you scowled every day. And I would see this, and I'm the activities, you know, director, and so I'm supposed to be nice to her and say something to her. But for, like, the longest time, I never even said one word to her. I was just like, you know, I'd see her, and I'd kind of walk by her like this. And, you know, one day I was looking down the hall at her, and she was just sitting there scowling. And I remembered saying to myself, gosh, how many times have I said, I'm going to try to reach out to this lady? It's every tomorrow, the next day, someday. I thought, you know what? I'm going. So I went down and I sat right alongside of her, and she was like, oh, she goes, and she didn't say anything. She just scowled at me and looked me right in the eye. And I looked at her and I said, hey, I just sat down to tell you that God cares about you. And I thought I saw her face begin to relax, so I took my big shot. I said, hey, would you like me to tell you what Jesus has done for me and what he can do for you? And I'm not playing. I'm going to do it straight ahead. She's like, just as she goes, yeah, I really would. And of course, I'm in the inside of my mind going, what do I say next? And so for like 15 minutes, I just talked to her. I said, well, here's what happened for me. And I was totally shocked that Jesus was the kind of person he was, because I'd heard other things, and I was really fortunate to be around some people that followed Christ that accepted me, because I was a complete basket case. And the more I get to know him, the more I see how understanding he is and patient with me, and he's making me a better person. It isn't just some cheap grace, like, hey, go do whatever you want, and you're good by me. And he's like at the perfect balance of talking with me, and I don't know, I can honestly say I've never met anybody like him. And she's listening to me, and I saw her eyes start to puddle up. And I'm just like, wow, it's working. And so I asked her, I said, would you like that? And she said, I'd like it so much. Now, I'm a young man, so I don't have a lot of bullets in my chamber. So I didn't really say the best thing ever. I just said, okay, well, let's just do it right now then. I'll just pray for you right now. Do you want me to? And she said, would you please? And so I just prayed the best prayer I could pray. And I was embarrassed to pray it, but I still prayed it. And I grabbed her hand. And when I got done and opened my eyes, I'm telling you, her the smile on her face was so radiant. And I walked away from her for a ways, and I looked back, and still a smile on her face. Now, this is the story. Every day she would come out, same blue windbreaker, but she would sit in that chair, and she beamed with this smile. It became the talk of the entire nursing complex. What happened to her? And I'm, of course, like, hey, if you got 15 minutes, I'm pretty good at that, you know. So. And I came into work one day. It was not even a week later, and I went into her room, and she wasn't there. And I was like, oh, where's she at? And a nurse said, we have no idea what happened. She like, caught us all by surprise. She passed away last night. And I was like, wow. You know, I just caught that opportunity. And this story is about a woman. She can't see opportunities. All she can see is the same well, same circumstances. And Jesus comes and says, I'm the Messiah. You don't have to wait till someday. The opportunity can occur today. And so what is it in your life that you've been wondering about? And you say, well, someday that's going to happen for me. Someday I'll do that. The Messiah says, today, to this woman and to you. And then here's the last one, care enough to share. The woman left her water jar beside the well and ran back to the village, telling everyone, come and see a man who told me everything I ever did. So you know they must have been talking for a while. Could he possibly be the Messiah? So the people came streaming from the village to see him. She left her water jar beside that well. And so Jesus gives her a whole different way, a whole different method, and gives her a whole different well. And she runs back to the very village. Now listen, there's a reason, there's a backdrop to this story. There's a reason she's there at 12 o'clock. All the women in this village, they all come first thing in the morning in the cool of the day to get their water, but not her, because she's ashamed. So she waits until everybody's gone. It's really, really super hot and nobody's there. And that's when she drags her jar over to the well, because she's ashamed. Because I've been married 5 times. And the dude I have now won't even marry me. And so she's at this well in the middle of the day. She's an expert in hiding. She doesn't have any influence on anybody. And by the way, like when you get tangled up in something, here's the price you always pay, self-respect. And when you don't have self-respect, it is so difficult to influence anybody. And so now she runs back into the very village that she's so used to hiding from. One encounter. Different well. So I wanted to ask the question, what well are you drinking from? What well is it? And what type of refreshment does it offer you, and how lasting? Here's how you know if it's the right well. Does it last? We at East Lake, we kind of see ourselves as a well here in Salt Lake City. You know, we came here to be a place where people could come, kick the tires of Christianity, and I guess in a way drink something different and new. And so off we went. And I want to do like a little bit of family business now. Like, see this card here? Take that out and just look at it right there. Just, you got this card right there. I'll tell you what it's all about. We've decided to put another well in here in the valley. We're going to start another service for people out in West Valley City. And the idea is that out in West Valley City, the reason it's such a great idea is there's hardly any churches out there, and there's lots and lots of people that don't go to church in West Valley City. So we talked to some people out there. We took a look at it. It's like, you know, I think how we approach it like would be good for people out there. So we talked to one of the community centers out there, and they said, yeah, you could come in here and do your church service right in here. So we prayed about it, thought about it, and said, you know what? We're going to start an entirely different service out there for people that want to go, you know, in West Valley. And one of the things Eastlake does is we'll start other services around for other people. We put other wells in the ground so people will be able to come to it. So we decided, well, we'll start this service out in West Valley City. And so that's going to be on Sundays. And the reason we have this is because there's lots of different things that need to be done. So if you want to help out on that, you know, you can help. Just put your name and email, your phone number or something. We'll call you up and say, hey, here's what's going on if you want to help in West Valley. Now, it's sort of like a two-pronged thing. It's going to start on February 12th is the grand opening. This particular service, what we've heard just ever since we began This may not be totally up your alley, but what we began is that in urban area here, in the city of Salt Lake City, 11 o'clock is considered early, go figure. So people invite their friends and ask them, hey, you want to come to church and stuff like that? What time is it? 11? 11? I'm dreaming at 11, man. Breakfast is 1 for me. So it's very difficult to invite people to these services at 11 o'clock. For instance, a lot of you don't even know that we sing songs here because you're not here at 11. You don't even know we do music. You come in like, you know, it's like during the videos. It's a cool video church. No, we actually sing 3 songs every Sunday. Come check it out sometime. So, you know, 11:30. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to start out in West Valley City on Sundays at 10 o'clock. We're going to move this service to 6 p.m. And the idea is we can reach more people in this area. It's a more convenient time for them to attend church at 6 p.m. Now, you might have already thought, well, not for me. How dare you? You didn't consult me on that. You're right, I didn't. But I will tell you this. It's 11, 12 minutes from here to West Valley. So if you're going, hey, I'm a morning person, man. I just, you know, and I don't want to go to church at 6 p.m., then go to West Valley. That's fine. Find some friends out there and reach out there. The idea is to create 2 wells for people to come to that are the best possibilities for them to get the news. See? And so take this little card right here, and if you can help with that, if you're just like, well, I can help somehow. Now, there's lots of different ways. Maybe the only way you can help is say, hey, I'll go to the grand opening service out in West Valley. That's how I'll help. That's fine. You might be new today, and you're like, I don't even know if I would want to do anything. Like, maybe you'll just say, I'll go to the first 6 p.m. service. That's fine. But if you're just saying, I'll do something, I'll help somehow, then just jot your name on this. And if you're a regular, jot it on there, because we need them all, because it's going to take a grip of us to make this go. So there's 2 different opportunities, 2 services for people to come to. Now, here's the good news. The news can reach anyone. When they came out to see him, they begged him to stay in their village. So he stayed for 2 days, long enough for many more to hear his message and believe. Then they said to the woman, now we believe not just because of what you told us, but because we have heard for ourselves. We've heard him for ourselves. Now we know that he is indeed the Savior of the world. So this man is jogging in one of the parks. This is a true story. He's jogging along, and he hears this like person cry out. And at first, he doesn't think anything of it. They're just playing. Someone's goofing around. But then he realizes, whoa, you know, someone's screaming out and scared. They're in trouble. So he stops jogging, and he stops, and he looks over, and he sees this woman being thrown down on the ground behind these bushes. And in like an instant, he realizes, whoa. That man is attacking that woman. That's, you know, and he sees the whole thing right there. You know, it's like right over there. And he's just running by. You know, he's just jogging by. And he can't make out what the woman looks like, but he can tell by her voice. And this guy has got her down, pinned to the ground. And in an instant, it's for him. It's like, do I go? Do I not go? What do I do? I'm scared. He looks big. And he just decides. And he runs. He jumps through the side of this bush. And he hits the dude and knocks him off of this woman. And the guy gets up and looks at him and turns and runs instead. And while that's happening, the girl gets up, shirt torn off, runs back behind this tree and gets behind it. And all of a sudden, like this 15 seconds, this dude is just standing there. This is the true story. This happens. He's just like, whoa, you know, it's like, and he says to the girl, he says, hey, listen, I'm not going to hurt you. He's gone now. We can call the police now. Everything's going to be all right. It's okay. It's all right now. And from behind the bush, he hears this, Dad? Dad, is that you, Dad? He saved his own daughter. I'm just asking, what well are you drinking from? Does it help you tell all your friends? So grab your connection cards and we'll go the rest of the way. There's a little card in your program there. Just grab those and we'll fill those out and we'll go the rest of the way.